Just a moment. Just a moment.
Welcome to the Future Law Podcast, exploring where the law has been.
Hey Siri, take a selfie.
And where it's going.
Oh, good afternoon.
From the brilliant.
My name is Sophia, and I am the latest and greatest robot.
To the scary.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
And everything in between. Please welcome your very real and very human host, Mike Madison.
Welcome to the Future Law Podcast. This is your host, Professor Michael Madison of the University of Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Innovation is an obvious watchword for the future of law, but what does innovation mean on the ground, in practice? How do future lawyers make innovation practical and relevant in the day-to-day of their work for clients? My guest has been focused on precisely those problems. Previously, as the U.S. Director of Innovation at Eversheds, a global top 20 law firm, and now as Vice President and Solutions Lead for United Lex, a leading law and technology services company that works with in-house legal departments. She's Anuja Gillespie, and she brings a distinctive, expert, and fresh voice to the future of law. Anuja, welcome to the Future Law Podcast.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
So you came onto my radar screen via the Legal Evolution website and the writing that you've done there, in particular, the new column that you've launched that's called New Law Fundamentals. Let's start by having you just quickly explain what new law means for anybody who's not already aware of that, and then what you're getting at with New Law Fundamentals.
Absolutely. And thank you for the question and interest in the column. So with new law, the definition to date has been around process and deliverables that are being infused into law with new approaches. And actually what this column is setting a tone for is stepping back and saying, well, those are the product, but actually new law is the mindset and the approach and the ability to bring in different tools and processes to solve problems and move forward. So the way that this column is defining new law and talking about it is actually the mindset of a new law lawyer being open to drawing in all the available resources to best solve a client's problem. And the thought process behind launching this column was based on experience in, we just need a baseline fundamentals for everyone to be speaking the same language. Because right now, marketing people are grabbing, AI and the latest buzzwords, and then the technology people are steeped within their worlds and speaking tech, and everyone's talking around the same things, but not speaking the same language. And so the goal of this column is to kind of level set so that we can all understand what we're talking about and move forward. So it's both a kind of educational campaign, but also bringing everyone to a common language.
Can you give us an example of what a fundamental shared vocabulary is that you have written about or that you're thinking of writing about?
I mean, the definition of new law itself is the first Q&A coming out, because even that, we don't have consensus of what does new law mean. Does that mean an alternative legal service provider, or does that mean a new technology tool? Like, what are we talking about here? So it starts with just the basic definition of new law itself. But then moving forward, it's what does it mean when we talk about artificial intelligence? Does that mean that we are buying something, building something? Does that mean that we're going into something new? Or actually, we've been using Westlaw and Fastcase and all these tools that use artificial intelligence for a really long time, and people just aren't aware of that. And so it's a baseline understanding of the fundamental to bring everyone to the same page of, here's current state. You know, you hear all this language, but here's the practical application now. And then here, when you hear what people are talking about, this is the application that they're thinking of going forward.
You've had, in a relatively short career since you graduated from law school, you've moved through
okay, classic or traditional junior lawyer positions into this innovation themed role, first in super large law firm and now at United Lex. You talk a little bit about innovation in law and in the legal function and how you understand that process in the different roles that you've inhabited. What is innovation to you?
Innovation to me in law, and I see you smiling because you know that's a loaded big question. Innovation to me in law is problem solving for clients using the best available tools. So another column I did on Legal Evolution was on innovation and the maker's matrix. And it was, you know, not the I know a guy, but I know the right guy or gal to solve this problem. And it's not going to be just one person. It's going to be three or four because they then know the right tools to bring in to best solve this problem and move forward. However, that's also, you know, the way described kind of a point solution approach, and that's not innovation either. So that's a microcosm of a bigger piece of innovation in the legal ecosystem, which is us all moving to digital and all progressing together, which is a whole other realm of culture, digital skills, mindset. And this is where it gets interesting to me, where it's not just about the technology. It's all the organizational pieces that have to be put in place to then make the technology useful.
So let's focus on that, the organizational piece, the non-technological piece, because you're right, my question was loaded. And people do stereotype innovation as being about technology and technology tools and technology systems and don't always take account of organizational context and other people resources. So how has your perspective on innovation evolved? And how do you describe some of the nitty-gritty or nuances of the organizational context piece?
So evolved from, I would say, my first introduction to the word innovation. You know, it's always been things are changing and fast, and now it's this word innovation that we're using, was during my time at Harvard Law School Executive Education, where we have these, you know, 4 to 6 day long intensive programs with managing partners, general counsels from around the world in the room trying to solve problems. And this topic of innovation would come up and no one really had the answer or knew exactly what they were talking about. You know, this was 5+ years ago now, but and a lot has changed. But that's where I initially got interested and said, okay, what is this? And people didn't quite seem to know. So it's evolved from complete ambiguity, frankly, to a pretty concrete understanding of what we're trying to achieve here. And within the law firm context, I would say that my biggest success at Evershed Sutherland was in moving the mindset of the firm from tech forward to tech is a part of everything we're trying to do here. And from that have evolved to an even bigger picture of the legal ecosystem, and legal departments are driving this because of the demands on them to get more value and capacity without 10 timesing the same number of people producing the work. And that's going to drive throughout the entire value chain. And that's what I see as innovation in law generally now, is us all upskilling together to get to the next level of the legal profession, legal industry. And maybe that's the change.
Can you give an example or two? You mentioned Eversheds and how you were able to succeed in getting the law firm to sort of think differently about innovation in context and sort of an ecosystem vision as opposed to simply a tool-based vision. Can you give an example or two of what helped you succeed? Like what kind of strategies or tactics or techniques that helped you advance those arguments successfully and how you overcame resistance? Because I'm going to intuit that there probably was resistance along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really interesting about being in a law firm and working across every practice group, and this was a like matter of survival as well, is that you couldn't just lead with tech because technology was not applicable to the insurance partners as it was to the litigation partners. And so if you only talked about technology, you'd only be speaking to one audience within the firm and another very powerful audience wouldn't be involved. And so how do you move an entire firm forward on a technology platform if it's only relevant, mostly relevant to certain pockets? And so that really pushed me to step back and say, okay, technology innovation is not equal across practice groups. Where is each practice group? What's relevant? Where are their clients? And then develop practice group specific approaches there. And for some, it was a non-engagement strategy because frankly, their clients were chief financial officers or others that were not corporate legal departments and didn't have the same pressures. So my story and putting, voice of client, general counsel in front of them, they said, but that's not my client. I said, oh, okay, got to go back to the drawing board on this. You know, that's a fair pushback. Let me come back to you and think about this a little bit differently. So that's the challenge, is you can't go across a law firm with one message on what innovation is, because it really is not that, you know, everyone's a special snowflake, but the strategy needs to be different across the different practice areas based on industry, based on client, and based on the actual legal work being done.
Sounds like an enormous amount of listening on
it is,
your part.
Yes.
So you mentioned earlier on, a minute or two ago, you mentioned the Maker's Matrix. And I wanted to come back to that and give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about what that is. And it sounds like it's something that was useful to you as you were undertaking this listening and advising process at Evershed. So what is the Maker's Matrix and how is it useful more broadly beyond the specifics of your own personal experience?
Yeah. And that's actually a great transition into that, because that listening work then helped produce the Maker's Matrix, because I said, okay, well, first, what is the Maker's Matrix? It's a way to diagnose from problem to solution and resourcing for innovation within the legal context. And through that entire listening tour and experience while I was getting my head around all of this, I found that every problem or opportunity described seemed to fall within three major categories, one being around data, one being around business models, and one being around thought leadership. Now, technology comes into play to different strengths and extremes within each of those. Data, very technology heavy. Business model, more digital technology heavy. Thought leadership, maybe you bring in people who understand technology, but you're not actually making something necessarily. Maybe there are some unique examples there. So where technology comes into play was very different across all of those problem and opportunity areas. And then who's in the best position to solve in these different categories? Is it a law firm legal advice problem or opportunity? Is it a partnership area with your client where you're saying, let's figure out better ways to work together, but it's not necessarily about the advice that I'm giving you, or maybe it is, but just the way that I'm delivering it to you needs to change, like a e-learning module or something like that. And then the next level of, or is this a, you know, really heavy process technology, alternative legal service provider type space? And so if we're in data, within that matrix, this is a data opportunity or problem, and we're at that process technology area that really an alternative legal service provider should be solving for, then let's go out and talk to them and buy or partner. But we shouldn't be trying to organize ourselves because we don't have the right people to do that. And that's where the people part comes into it. Within each one of those boxes, so it creates a 9-box matrix, there are different people that are best suited to solve that problem. So data, knowledge management, technology, within the data bucket. You move into business models. It could be even more like marketing professionals and then figuring out the right kind of development and digital tools that you could use. And then in the thought leadership category, it's probably people like yourself and academics or, you know, top of their field people to really get around a problem and then figure out what to do next.
So the matrix is a way to organize the character of the problem or the character of the opportunity and then guide you to a kind of organizational context instinct in terms of steps to take next.
Yeah, and it really comes to the people. And do we have those people internally? And if we don't, then do we partner or buy or build to then address, you know, our objective here? So yes.
Now that you're out of the law firm environment, you're no longer at Eversheds and you've moved over to United Lex. And so as a services company, you're working closely, I take it, with corporate law departments as
Correct.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
How does your perspective on innovation and your perspective on organizational context and this, you know, the matrix, for example, as a tool for helping to diagnose that, how is your view different? How is the character of your advising different now that you're working directly with corporate law departments as opposed to trying to shift the ship of a law firm state?
Yeah, so the matrix still holds, and I'd, you know, welcome anyone to challenge that because I'd be interested to see different perspectives as to where maybe it doesn't hold. But as a problem-solving and resourcing strategy tool, that holds in both environments, and I see that as holding across legal. I can't necessarily speak to other industries, but the way that my work has changed, and I'll just tell you a phone call I had of like, okay, you know, maybe what do I want to do next was with a general counsel. And I said, hey, you know, thinking about next steps here, what would you advise me? My goal is to be core to the business because within a law firm, unless it's contained within a practice group, innovation, I have not seen it yet, and please challenge me on this as well, is not core to the business. And so that means that you're constantly in a selling position, a persuasion position, hence coming back to new law fundamentals. I want to give people tools to better persuade and educate and get, you know, real stakeholders to say yes, because law firms are part of this entire legal ecosystem innovation equation. And so they need to get to yes as well. And so within United Lex, the way that my work has changed is that it's easier, frankly. I mean, it's more complicated, but what I was really struck by was my conversations in the business. I'm not persuading, explaining as much as I was in the law firm context. Everyone gets it. Everyone says, okay, yes. And how do we do that? Let's go. You know, how are we moving that forward? And so it's a lot less burdensome for me to produce results. And so that's a kind of open runway, green light field that is an innovation person's dream, and in a way that you're working directly with the client as well. And so you have great access to move things forward and have still though the incentive of clients wanting what's the new idea, what's the creative energy. So you still have that spark of like finding the next thing and then making it that you have within the law firm context here as well, just maybe situated within different technologies and environments.
And sources of resistance or obstacles are not gone, but I imagine that they're different.
They're different. You know, resistance and obstacles are more just, are we doing this right? We're trying to lead the way. And so you just always have to second guess yourself and say, what could go wrong here? Is this right? And so it's more of a, without a path to follow necessarily as being the ones making it, the resistance is just, let's make sure we get this right and go. Versus, do we want to do this at all?
Interesting. I wondered if you could walk us through a little bit of your own career history and how you moved from recent law school graduate to junior lawyer in a private practice law firm into the innovation space. So what motivated you to reimagine how you could apply your legal training and to dive ever more deeply into this field.
My interest in this area, and I mentioned earlier that we're now calling it innovation, and before it was just ways of doing new things and doing things better. But I saw within a law firm early in my career, and I did a talk about this actually, that there was a experience I had where I'm tripping over my words right now. I'm just not quite sure where to start. There was an accountant who did not come back from lunch one day. And it turned out she had embezzled over $1 million and she had gotten away with it. And so it just left this deep impression on me of how do all these really, really smart lawyers let this happen? And so it really introduced me to the business of law while I had been so focused on the lawyers and the legal aspect. And you're so smart, but how did this happen? And so in law school, I actually added on the MBA component because I wanted to get into the business of law and understand that more. There's no clear path, at least there wasn't then. And honestly, I don't think that there is now such a clear path as to how to get into the business of law or what that looks like. So in my head, I said, okay, you know, I'll go and be a partner at a firm and then I'll get into the business of law. And so I went and I worked at a law firm, and then I saw that it would be 10 years of practicing law before I'd really be able to do what I wanted to do and be and influence the business of law. And I wouldn't necessarily have the skills I needed to do that well, because I would have developed 10 years of being a practicing lawyer and have those really great skills, but not necessarily where I wanted to focus. And so I kind of jumped and said, how do I get there faster? Started a business on legal leadership, learned a lot, failed a lot. and that's actually what landed me at Harvard Law School. Executive education was some of that work I did around women in law. I had done an independent study in law school on the negative impact of the billable hour on women and concluded that right now within current structures, which are not great or geared towards women and diversity objectives, but rainmaking was what I saw as a path forward and around that given current circumstances. And so that was part of my business to problem solve for women in law. And Harvard just happened to be making a women's leadership program. And so kind of all stars aligned and then got in that way. And as I mentioned earlier, that's then where I had this great exposure to worldwide conversations around innovation and other aspects as well. But that seemed like the area that really needed some problem solving.
That's fascinating. I want to pick up on your reference to the firm that you started for yourself before you went to Harvard and the idea of leadership development, leadership education, particularly for lawyers, I take it, and with the special attention to opportunities and challenges for women and other historically underrepresented communities in law. On this podcast, we've talked about leadership education and leadership training quite a lot. There's a movement that you may have encountered within legal education around the U.S. and other schools in other parts of the world, trying to figure out how to add leadership and related competencies and capabilities to the conventional law degree. And when I talk to practicing lawyers and leaders of corporate law departments, they're also really interested in how to make sure that when they recruit, they're recruiting people who are primed to succeed with these additional skills. And so what I'm wondering is how much of that experience that you had in an earlier part of your career comes forward into what you're doing today in advising your partners and consulting clients about how to move ahead with the right systems, technologies, tools, and people.
So from a personal perspective, it relates because it set me on a mission-driven path. And so I'm still very much that way where I see this reality for legal, all of the innovation, digital, all of that to me actually helps create and open spaces for the diversity challenges and other mental health, other challenges that we have within the legal profession. If we change the ways that we work, it opens up new spaces to problem solve and explore. And so I see all of these problems and issues related to this kind of elegant solution that we don't know necessarily know what that solution is yet, but we're building the pieces to get there. So for me, that business helped crystallize my mission about the legal profession. But then what's changed is, okay, but how do we get there? And so I started, and I still believe in this leadership platform. But then that moves into the practical of, okay, so what are you going to lead? What tools are you going to use to do that? And I think that the introducing leadership concepts within a law school curriculum is a fantastic introduction. And just mentally, what I found for myself was that law school, my mind got narrower and narrower and narrower because you lead into issues. So my brain was going vertically. And then as I went into the MBA program and then this business, I had to stretch my brain horizontally across disciplines. And, you know, it might bring to mind the T-shaped lawyer. I think there's T's and O's and deltas and all of this, but that actually is a real thing. And you can't, unless you do that stretching horizontally and at least have some depth of understandings of different disciplines and areas, including leadership competencies, then you're kind of stuck within practicing, you know, traditional law, which is a great skill and tool to have, but not enough for where we're going.
Let me ask you one last question, which is, let's hypothesize a sort of generic or standard small law firm out there in some mid-sized city. And it's not, they don't have the resources or the time to engage a sophisticated technology services company to help advise them with transitions forward. But they realize, as sort of a legacy traditional law practice, that to maintain their business, to maintain their standing in the community, to keep the revenue coming in, and to continue to serve communities and clients that they want to serve, that they need to advance, they need to innovate, they need to improve. Or you're an in-house lawyer, a lawyer of one, a department of one in a small company that has the budget to have a lawyer in-house, but not really the budget to have a full team of people in-house. Again, a person who's in a position to know that improvements in people and systems are necessary to help the business continue to thrive. What are one or two beginning steps that people in those roles should take, or how should they begin the thinking process in terms of moving forward? Because I talk to people and they literally say, I don't know where to start. It seems so complicated. The technology is so fast paced. It just seems too much of a hill to climb. What's your generic starting point advice?
And I will answer your direct question on generic starting point, but also that's part of new law fundamentals, and a reason for it is to give people a life raft, something to hold on to, something to go to say, okay, this is where I start. Or maybe it's not this particular asked question, but it's the next one. And it starts making it relatable to people. It starts making it easier to absorb and know where to go. To your specific questions and examples, small law firms are doing a lot for each other. Going to subscription models and those kinds of things, they're sharing a lot of information and then actually monetizing their sharing of that information of, let me help you go to the subscription model, sign up for my course, that kind of thing. So a lot of that is out there. And there's a great Twitter community actually around that, and a place that I would start. For small teams in-house, And they know this, the power of their voice of just law firms, tell me what I need to know and where I need to start. But also, what's my business objective internally? What pressure am I getting? Where do I start? And then actually going back to the maker's matrix as a framework, is what my business is asking me to do around data? Is it around how we're delivering our services internally? And we need to make that experience better. Is it around thought leadership that they want us to blow something up and create something new? Like, what is it that this business is asking me to do? And then in terms of where do I start, you can, you know, pressure your law firms and other providers to help you get there.
It's an ecosystem of support at the end of the day.
It is.
Awesome. Okay, Anuja, let's close it there. I want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insights and history with us. And I want to wish you all the best of success in your new role at United Lex and in leading innovation in law going forward.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the opportunity to be on your podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Future Law Podcast. For links to the articles mentioned and to contact the hosts, visit futurelawpodcast.com.